The state backs off a plan to allow special elk kill permits this spring. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Flathead reporter Katrin Fry visits with some Montanans who have hit the century mark. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with the head of Adventure Cycling about the growing bike tourism industry. Montana officials have agreed not to issue any elk kill permits this season after a legal challenge to their plan to reduce the spread of disease to cattle. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Director Jeff Hagener says that in a letter dated yesterday, the agency won't issue the permits authorized under the Paradise Valley Brucellosis Plan through May 15th. The plan does not allow kill permits after May 15th. Montana's Fish and Wildlife Commission last month approved the measures to prevent elk and cattle from commingling in parts of Park County where brucellosis has been detected. The disease can cause cattle to abort their calves and is carried by some elk. The Skyline Sportsmen's Association and Anaconda Sportsmen Club filed a lawsuit against FWP yesterday seeking to block the entire plan.
And in other news from around the state, a Montana man who sued Remington Arms Company over claims a defective rifle killed his 9-year-old son says the manufacturer should be commended for recalling the model. Remington issued a nationwide recall in April of its Model 700 and Model 7 rifles equipped with the Exmark Pro Trigger manufactured between May 2006 and April 9, 2014. The company says some rifles may have excess bonding agent that could cause them to accidentally fire. The Billings Gazette reports stores carrying the rifles have shipped all their stock back to Remington to have the trigger mechanisms cleaned. Richard Barber says a defective Model 700 rifle was responsible for the death of his son Gus in the year 2000. He says the recall is important because it signifies that Remington may be coming around.
A bankruptcy judge is considering a key report to Southern Montana Electric Generation and Transmission Cooperative's reorganization plans. The Billings Gazette reports tomorrow's hearing in Great Falls is one of two that could resolve the wholesaler's financial problems after 2.5 years of bankruptcy. The 210-page disclosure statement to be considered by U.S. bankruptcy judge Ralph Kircher details the Billings-based co-op's business operations, bankruptcy filing, and its reorganization plan. Southern provides electricity to four cooperatives in Red Lodge, Lewiston, Hysham, and Ashland. If Kircher approves the report, the plan will go to a May 20th confirmation hearing in Billings. A member of one of those co-ops, Bruce Austin, filed a late objection that says the report is another baseless reorganization plan without regard to the value of the estate.
Montana is counted among the fastest-growing states for an aging population. In a nod to the state's aging demographic, the annual Governor's Conference on Aging looks at issues specifically affecting seniors, including transportation, health, and safety. It also serves as an opportunity to recognize many of Montana's centenarians. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on what Governor Steve Bullock calls legacy Montanans.
Virginia Ofis turned 100 years old in April. She's been in the Flathead for about 12 years.
But I was born and raised on the farm, Otter Big Sandy.
Ofis is the aunt of Senator John Tester, also of Big Sandy. Prior to coming to the Flathead, she lived in Chester.
Well, it's just a little town on the High Line, and we had fun there. But I had two daughters here. I didn't have any family there. I had a daughter there, but she passed away, and so they wanted me to move over here.
Ofis was at the Red Lion Inn in Kalispell this week, along with 12 other Flathead area centenarians as part of the 46th Annual Governor's Conference on Aging. The two-day event took place in Kalispell and Bozeman this year. Others recognized include 100-year-old Margaret Pontius of Big Fork, who started the first library in the town, as well as the senior center, and 101-year-old Forrest Sanford Thompson, who worked as a cabinet maker and carpenter until retiring at the age of 93. These are among the group of people Governor Steve Bullock calls legacy Montanans.
Montanans are currently living longer. I learned that one of the many honors I get to do is sign certificates for the centenarians. Writer's cramp this year.
Montana has 175 centenarians as of the 2010 census. For Ofis, her legacy includes 3 daughters, 7 grandchildren, and 12 great-grandchildren. Bureau Chief of Aging Services Charlie Rabine with the Department of Health and Human Services says lifelong Montanans are getting older. Other native Montanans are returning to live out their golden years in the Treasure State, and others are moving in for retirement. The conference aims to look at ways to tackle some of the challenges that exist with aging in Montana.
You know, and I think for the future, what we have to look at is how do we provide services to people in those more rural, isolated areas of Montana. They've grown up there. They've lived there all their lives. They're farmers, ranchers. Now they're moving into town or whatever. And, you know, are the services, can we get the services to them?
Rabine says several communities in Montana are already hitting half their population over the age of 65. He says right now they're looking at changes in the way seniors connect with services.
The younger seniors don't like the word senior center because they go, we're not old. So they're looking at maybe changing the name to community center and maybe including even teenagers and younger kids in various activities in those facilities. So yeah, we're in flux right now, change, trying to let people know that, you know, the elderly, even though they're old, they still have a lot to give.
The focus of this year's conference is on health and wellness and getting information out to those who need it.
We're talking about arthritis, Alzheimer's, a variety of in-home services. We're doing one on driving. When should people think about retiring from driving as they age? We're doing one on veterans, direct home and community-based services.
There's also a focus of avoiding scams geared toward the elderly, a problem Bullock says he became aware of in his former job as Attorney General.
I know from the old job, too, that the best way to respond, the best way to make sure that no one is taken by scams is really through education. Spreading the network, or spreading the word through networks of family, friends, and coworkers, as you're doing here.
The conference each year is geared toward seniors as well as caregivers. Rabine says in 20 years, 25% of the state's population is projected to be 65 years old or older. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
The 55 recently discovered absentee ballots from Anaconda's school board trustee election last year have been counted, and the results did not change. 3 trustees tallied the votes yesterday, only to confirm the trustee who won last year's election, Michael Huant, was still the winner. Huant had defeated Angela Gall by 24 votes. After the recount, the margin had narrowed to 20 votes. The 55 uncounted ballots were inadvertently left behind after the election and only recently found. Gall won another board seat in this week's election. The Montana Standard reports the system for verifying absentee ballots has been changed this year.
Proceeds from a Mother's Day benefit concert in Helena this Sunday will benefit the new Montana Women's Mural, which will grace the halls of the Montana State Capitol this fall. The Montana Women's Mural was authorized by the legislature in 2011. If you're not familiar with the Missoula artist's name, Hadley Ferguson, you may be quite familiar with her work if you visited the Garden City recently. Her 7 murals, titled The Heart of Missoula, can be found at the corner of Higgins and Broadway. There are a few images of Montana women among the magnificent works of art in the Capitol. Ferguson says her mural will help rectify that.
The mural was designed to showcase the work of women in Montana, a broader look at women in Montana, their work in families, the economy, politics, and how they worked together to build communities throughout Montana. It doesn't necessarily highlight a specific woman, historical figure in Montana, but it highlights the women who work together with the broader group.
Ferguson's in the process of creating the mural, the details of which are top secret. She does say it's one mural made of 2 separate panels focusing on the time from the early 1900s to the 1930s. The Montana Women's Chorus will present a Mother's Day concert this Sunday in Helena, and tax-deductible donations for the painting and installation will be collected there. Other performers include the Bozeman Bucket Band Chicks with Sticks, the dancing of the Cool Water Hula, among many other performers. Sunday's benefit concert for the Montana Women's Mural Project starts at 2 o'clock this Sunday at St. Paul's United Methodist Church in Helena. Admission is a sliding scale donation of $5 to $25.
Bicycle tourism is big money these days. In tonight's feature interview with Edward O'Brien, Jim Sayer talks about the economic potential bicycle tourism holds for cities and counties interested in taking advantage of the sector's growing revenue potential. Sayer's the executive director of the Missoula-based Adventure Cycling Association, the largest bicycle advocacy membership organization in North America. Sayer says the concept of bike tourism doesn't always fit into a neat definition.
Bike tourism is everything when a tourist goes on a bike. So it could be a multi-day trip. It could be a day ride. There was a study recently on the European bike tourism market, and it generates about $57 billion a year in Europe. Three-quarters of that is just day riders. So that's as if you went to a city in Europe and you went for a week, and one day you decided to rent a bike, go get a meal, all of that stuff, but it'd just be a day ride. And so that's a huge, really lucrative market. But then there are also multi-day tourists who just cruise along, want to see the landscape, want to see towns, want to see historic sites. And then there are people who do bike overnights, one or two night trips. So it's everything. It's a wide spectrum, but it's an increasingly growing market in the U.S. travel and tourism market.
What's the draw? What's the appeal? I guess that's an obvious question.
Well, it's a combo. The fastest growing segment of the overall travel market is active travel. So that's kayaking, biking, hiking, walking. People want to get active. You see it especially with the boomer generation. You see it with millennials. You see it all across the age spectrum. People want to get out and not just sit there while they're going around and seeing things. So being able to combine an activity where you're getting out there and being physically fit and then seeing great things is just a wonderful way to travel. A number of states are doing economic impact studies right now. Oregon did one, saw that they're generating nearly $500 million a year from bike tourism. The state of Wisconsin did a study, and they found that they were generating nearly $1 billion a year related to bike tourism, from day trips to multi-day trips. And the amazing thing was, in Wisconsin, they found that this was competing with ice fishing, with deer hunting. So they said all of a sudden, whoa, this is a serious economic sector.
And it's not just that these bike tourists are spending money. I understand they tend to spend a little more than the average bear.
They do. We found in Montana, a study was done recently at the University of Montana, found that the average bike tourist who's doing a multi-day tour is spending about $75 a day, whereas the average tourist is spending closer to $60 a day. The reason is you don't have the capacity to carry a lot of stuff with you when you're on a bike. So you're going to stop more, you're going to buy more, you're going to need that emergency purchase. So if you're in a station wagon, you can carry a lot of that stuff. When you're on a bike, not so much.
And the question is, are Montana businesses picking up on this?
They are just starting. We've had some excellent meetings with the Department of Commerce and Travel Montana, and also with the director of the Department of Transportation, Mike Tooley, who's been very open to learning about how Montana can improve its roads and trails to provide a great cycling experience for visitors.
What does that mean, improving?
It depends. Some people want trails, and so one of the coolest things that's going to happen in the next year is the construction of a segment of trail between Lolo and Missoula. And that is going to create a world-class destination, in my opinion. It's going to be a 50-mile nonstop trail from downtown Missoula to Hamilton. And that is going to be an awesome experience for families, for people who don't want to mix it up with traffic. For those who are more experienced, they may want to go out in those highways. The main thing is that there aren't rumble strips getting in the way of the cyclist, that rumble strips don't take over the shoulder, that when there's an opportunity to redo a road out in the countryside, that they create a decent shoulder with good pavement without the really bumpy chip seal. So those are really simple things, but boy, when you add them all up, then Montana's going to get known as a major cycling destination.
I understand the Flathead Valley business owners are really starting to capitalize on this.
They are. We're seeing several new businesses. Whitefish Bike Resort has been established in the last year. We're seeing some other folks up in Big Fork appealing to bike tourists. And again, what they're doing is they're either creating themselves as a base camp, so people will stay there multiple days and then just go do day rides from there, or they'll be a way station for the traveling cyclist who's coming through.
And bikes and beer?
Oh, gosh, yeah. That was a major finding in the study, but you can just see it with all the craft breweries here. They really go together. And increasingly, we're going to see, I think, with that Bitterroot Trail from Missoula to Hamilton, you could see an awesome 2 or 3 day trip. I think you can go by about a dozen breweries, and it only takes 50 miles one way, 50 miles back. We just always tell people, you know, same as with driving, just be careful when you're drinking and biking. I'm hopeful that many of the bike shops here, because we also have like 8 or 9 bike shops in Missoula, mm-hmm. will start to offer more rentals and take advantage of this. We've already seen the Holiday Inn in downtown Missoula a couple of years ago began to offer cruiser bikes for people who just want to tool around the town. But I think if they offered some, you know, more performance-oriented bikes with gears and better brakes, I think people will take advantage of that and get around town and the valley.
Jim, before we started talking, you showed me an interesting map. You talked about how there are similarities between cycling and hunting and other outdoor activities in Montana.
Yeah, when you look at hunting, fishing, people really get out there. I love that slogan from Travel Montana, get lost. And they're really trying to get people out into the countryside, into the small communities. Most tourism tends to hover right around the interstates in the big cities. But in Montana, what we saw with the survey on bicyclists coming through is that they tend to go to a lot of the smaller communities. And some of them are taking advantage. Twin Bridges, population, I think, 400. They decided to try and attract more cycle tourists. So they carved off a tiny piece of their fairground, created a shower and a shelter, offered it for free to visiting cyclists. Word got out. Cyclists stopped. They began to use the facility. And in the first year, they donated about $10,000. They put out a coffee can. Cyclists donated $10,000. The cost of the project was $9,000. So they got the cyclists to stop. They spent the night. They went to the hardware store, the local restaurant. So everything else was gravy. So, again, you're seeing cyclists take advantage of these small towns, and they, frankly, love stopping there and meeting people because, you know, the bike is one of the friendliest vehicles ever created. People want to know your story, where you're coming from, where you're going. So one of the routes we've created is along the High Line, and we hear all the times from members and from cyclists how much they enjoy going along what we call the Northern Tier through Glacier and then out into eastern Montana. And those are some of the most memorable experiences, stopping in these small towns.
Boy, that'd be a windy ride, huh?
Sometimes. We get asked, that's like our number one question is, which way should I ride across the United States, east or west? Which way does the wind blow?
Yeah.
And we tell them, it shifts.
Yeah, right. National Tourism and Travel Week.
Yeah, this was established by Congress about 30 years ago to celebrate the tourism industry. It's one of the biggest in the U.S. It's about $2 trillion overall. And in Montana, it's one of our biggest industries along with agriculture. So I think it generates about $3.2 billion a year.
These are real dollars you're talking about.
This is a huge deal. It's a big industry for Montana. And what was exciting about the study of bicycle tourism is that Norma Nickerson and her crew, she's the director of the Institute on Tourism here at University of Montana, found that this market, this bike tourism market, could generate up to $370 million a year if it was properly promoted. So when you consider that's equal to almost 10% of the existing Montana tourism market, there's a lot of potential there.
And then further compound that by the limited window of opportunity that cyclists have in Montana, the average cyclist.
Yeah.
And there are the hardcores out there.
Yeah. Well, just to say, one of the other cool things that's happening that we've been promoting too are fat bikes. And some people may have seen these. They're like Popeye bikes. They have 4-inch tires. They look a little cartoonish, but they are super fun. You can ride them on ice and snow. And increasingly, places like Idaho are promoting these as a winter option. And, you know, one other indicator for us of the popularity of both mountain biking and what's called bikepacking, and then also snow bike tourism, is we just put out our latest route about a month ago, Idaho Hot Springs Mountain Bike Route. It's a fantastic 500-mile loop in central Idaho, connects Ketchum, Sun Valley, Boise, Salmon. We sold out that first printing of maps in about 3 weeks, and we already have a second printing. But it's mostly on gravel road, has some single track, but you can use it through spring, summer, fall. Really exciting to see the enthusiasm for this kind of cycling.
Other thing I wanted to talk about, and of course I left the information back in my office, the Adventure Cycling's Bike Route System campaign.
Oh, the United States Bicycle System, Bicycle Route System, USBRS. Right now, states across America are developing an official interstate bike system similar to the interstate highway system, but in this case for bikes, primarily on county roads, country roads, trails. But we now have 41 states working to establish this U.S. bike route system. We've established, designated, signed about 6,000 miles of routes around the U.S., and we have 5 more states that are going to create new routes this May. Mostly it's using existing facilities, but the signage and the mapping are being funded either by private sources or in some cases by state departments of transportation. Missouri just did something great. They funded the signage of U.S. Bike Route 76, which is actually Adventure Cycling's Transamerica route. And they did the whole thing this last year, so it's exciting. You'll actually have signage. They'll tell you how to go on the route. So it's exciting to see states stepping up to take advantage, again, of bike tourism.
Where do you see cycling in the next 10, 15 years as, say, baby boomers start to age maybe out a little bit?
Well, it's an interesting phenomenon in the market because somebody was telling me about the housing market, how boomers and millennials, the people in their 20s and early 30s, are actually converging on their housing preference. A lot of them are looking to live more in town, more convenient, not have so many cars, be able to walk and bike a lot more. And we're seeing it in the travel market too. More people are beginning to say we want this active travel market. So biking is growing as an activity. People are doing it more. We're seeing it in Montana's towns, just in Billings. And I was amazed to see how many people were biking around town. They're creating some great trails there. I just rode on the rims. Amazing trails, beautiful views of the valley and the river. So I see it happening all over Montana and all over the nation.
Jim, I always ask you this to wrap up. Spring, summer, warming up here. Well, it will be soon, hopefully. Your advice for cars and bikes, how to each play nice with one another, because I see each do things that maybe isn't so cool sometimes.
Yeah, all I can encourage people to do is just ride politely, take it easy, enjoy the ride, whether you're in a car or on a bike, because sometimes people get too impatient as to where they're going, and they realize that that's the number one reason you're going to jeopardize somebody else. Stay on the facilities that are meant for you, whether it's a bike lane or a separated bike lane, or if you're in the road, just be really careful, cautious as a cyclist, and then realize as a driver that bicyclists have full rights to the road. They should behave responsibly, and I think people are learning that. And the other cool thing I've seen in Missoula is for the first time, I think we're going to have a major separated bicycle lane facility on Russell Street when they start building that road next year, I believe.
Jim Sayer, Executive Director, Adventure Cycling Association, Missoula-based organization. Thanks so much for coming in.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight, rain is likely with lows in the mid-30s to lower 40s. Tomorrow, rain showers are likely with a slight chance of thunderstorms and highs should be in the 50s. In central Montana tonight, look for increasing clouds. Rain and snow showers are likely over the western mountains after midnight. Low should be 35 to 40 degrees. Tomorrow should be cloudy with a chance of rain. High should be 55 to 65 degrees. In southwest Montana tonight, it calls for increasing clouds with scattered rain and snow showers after midnight, and low should be 35 to 40 degrees. Tomorrow, look for cloudy skies with rain in the valleys and snow in the mountains. High should be 45 to 55 degrees.
Currently in our listening area, Helena is 62 degrees with fair conditions. In Kalispell, it's mostly cloudy and 61 degrees. Butte has 57 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Great Falls is partly cloudy with 63 degrees. Here in Missoula, the temperature under partly cloudy skies is 60 degrees. It's 60 degrees in Fair and Dillon. In Hamilton, it's partly cloudy and 62 degrees. Libby has 61 degrees with partly cloudy conditions, and Polson skies are partly cloudy, and it's 62 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Evan Barrett.
Seldom, if ever, has such a big win-win proposal been put before the Montana legislature as when the opportunity in 2013 came about to enact the expansion of Medicaid coverage to thousands of Montanans under the Affordable Care Act. Producing more than 10,000 jobs while at the same time making Montana and Montanans healthier, the bill was a policy bonanza that should have easily passed the legislature, but was narrowly defeated based upon political dogma, not facts. But now we, the people of Montana, have the opportunity to do what's right for ourselves and our economy. Petitions are now circulating to put Medicaid expansion on the ballot this November so the people can do what the legislature refused to do. Let's take a look at the economics. I've been involved in every legislature since 1971. Since 1985, I have also been up to my eyeballs in local and state economic development, where the ultimate measure of success is more and better jobs and a growing economy. In all those years, I have never seen a single legislative bill that was such a giant job creator. The nonpartisan Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research, the BBER, conducted an extensive study of Medicaid expansion prior to the last legislature. Every legislator was armed with facts as they considered the issue. What were those facts? Medicaid expansion would bring into Montana over the next 8 years between $5.8 and $6.4 billion. According to the BBR report, those funds would create between 11,500 and 12,700 jobs in Montana. Let me repeat that. About 12,000 permanent jobs would be created and sustained in Montana. 60% of those jobs would have been in the medical sector, which contribute to them being higher quality jobs. The BBER estimated the jobs would average $42,000 per year, which is 20% higher than the average Montana job. And those funds driving those jobs would result in a doubling of Montana's projected economic growth over the next 7 years. By the standard economic development parameters, more and better jobs, and strong economic growth, Medicaid expansion was an economic development bonanza. In terms of healthy Montanans, Medicaid expansion would provide health care coverage for at least 70,000 Montanans who currently do not have such coverage. By and large, these are working Montanans on the lower rungs of the economic ladder. Some estimates say as much as 100,000 more Montanans would be covered, but either way, a healthier Montana would be the result. This Medicaid expansion would augment the Montana results of the Affordable Care Act signups, which are significant in their own right in terms of improving health care outcomes in Montana. Officials with the three insurance companies providing such policies in Montana, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Pacific Source, and the new Montana Health Cooperative, have said that they had, since last October, signed up 71,300 people for individual coverage, including the Marketplace policies. This increase in medical coverage in Montana, especially when complemented by Medicaid expansion, will have a great impact on the health of Montanans, which includes saving lives. A recent study of death rates in Massachusetts shows a 3% reduction of mortality over the first 4 years that health care coverage went into effect there under Governor Romney. Extrapolated to the national level, a 3% decline in mortality among adults under 65 nationally would mean about 17,000 fewer deaths every year. It's fair to assume that the lives of many Montanans would be saved by Medicaid expansion. So, the facts show that Medicaid expansion in Montana is where good economics and good health intersect. Given those facts, when someone approaches you to sign the petition to get Medicaid expansion on the ballot, get all voters in your family to sign. Then prepare yourself for an onslaught of negative advertising during the fall election by the Koch brothers-supported groups designed to persuade you to vote against your own best interests and the best interests of the state, both economically and health-wise. When that happens, and it surely will, stick with the facts, not the political rhetoric and the dogma, and vote for Medicaid expansion in the Treasure State. This is Evan Barrett in Butte, thinking about the health of my family, your family, and all Montana.
Evan Barrett is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.